Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Brad.
Yes.
Do you know how we fund the program Going Off Track?
I know exactly how we fund it. There's one source of income for us, and that is patreon.com/goingofftrack, where our loving patrons give us money and we give them bonuses.
Patreon? Stop making up words. It's a great place. We do a weekly Thursday night fireside chat. Brad takes all the embarrassing things I say in podcasts that he doesn't put into podcasts and puts it on the Patreon. Funny pictures of Brad in the 90s, usually naked or wearing a wristband. Please sign up. Brad, what's the address?
Patreon.com/goingofftrack. Good morning and welcome to Going Off Track.
Hello, Brad. And how are we today?
I don't know why I said good morning. It's 8:16 p.m.
Yeah, I think there's a solid chance that the listenership may be tuning in the morning.
Oh, okay. Good morning.
I think that was a good, good newsman move. Welcome. The arsonist had oddly shaped feet. Can I tell you something funny that happened?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So I'm on my way to practice the other day. Going to Mercy Union practice, starting Woo-hoo! That up again. Got a new record coming.
Love it.
So it's going to be fun. Get to play drums.
Yes.
And I go to a Dunkin' Donuts, one of my favorite places. I go in for, what am I getting these days? A large. They got oat milk there now.
Yeah.
Just a large coffee with oat milk. And I'm in there. And I see a man across the Dunkin' Donuts kind of looking at me. And he's an Indian man. Probably, I'd say, 60s. Very well-kempt, mustache. Very nice hair, obviously. He's got, nice blazer, jacket, He's a professional guy.
Right.
And he gets his coffee and he taps me on the shoulder and he goes, "Hey, good drumming, man." And I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Whoa. And my brain is swimming here. I'm like, how? Okay, that's cool. I'm like, who knows? Maybe he's got a kit. Maybe he's just a fan. This is great. How interesting. And, my brain is racing and I'm smiling ear to ear. I'm like, this is the coolest thing. I go back to my car and I open the door. He's parked right next to me and my stick bag is just sitting in my passenger seat. So now I will forever have this question of whether this man actually knew me as a drummer and was like, "Oh, wow, cool. I saw Benny at a Dunkin' Donuts." Or he just saw my stick bag in the passenger seat and was just being cool and was like, "Hey, good drumming, man."
Yeah, but most people wouldn't know what a stick bag was.
Mm. I mean,
were your sticks sticking out of your stick bag?
What is this, amateur hour? No.
Yeah,
What's the point of a stick bag?
I think this
guy... That's true. It does say Zildjian on it or something.
Yeah, but still, unless he's a drummer himself.
He could be a drummer.
It's almost as good as being a fan, I think. Maybe.
Or maybe he did a short stint at a Guitar Center or something, a few months ago.
I'd like to think
random job in the warehouse.
I'd like to think he's a fan. The best
I'd like
be
to
if,
think so.
If he was like a fan, like a Mercy Union fan, or
oh my God, even better.
Or
yeah.
Vespucci.
That would be funny if Mercy Union came out of this pandemic and for some reason we had just hit a chord with like the early senior citizen Indian man crowd. Like, cool, you know?
Yeah.
That's good to me.
It could be big in India.
I'd love to go play. Oh, Indian weddings are great. Have you ever been?
Of course not.
Yeah. So, I mean, if I could get a gig doing those weddings, it sounds great.
I mean, it looks like a blast.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I would definitely go to one, whether I could play or not.
Right. Well, Brad, you know, different opportunities get laid before your feet all the time. And if this one gets laid before me, I think I'm jumping on. I'm going to quit.
Yeah.
I'm quitting the podcast and I'm just doing that. I'm playing Indian weddings.
Wow. I'll be your roadie.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I just saw our friend Zoe Kississippi, who we had this beautiful interview with, immediately took to Twitter after saying that she's going to get in trouble from her mom for this interview. So
mom.
I think we did our job, you know. We got the real meat
deal.
And potatoes out of here. The spice stories, you know?
Yeah.
That shit's funny. But that was a fun interview. And I got to tell you, this Mood Ring, this album Zoe made is really good. It's so catchy. I've been like bopping around my house for a couple of days listening to this. Big Dipper song's just got this great hook. And I'm really into it. I think I always appreciate, you know, artists who are just willing to take another direction, you know?
Right.
And the fact that this album sounds so different from her last album in presentation, you know, not exactly like content, but presentation, it's so much different. And I don't know, I appreciate people with the moxie to be like, I want to make this and this is what I'm making. And I don't care if Pitchfork gives me a zero. You know?
This is going to get the good Pitchfork review.
Oh, she's going to get a good mark.
Yeah,
this is getting good marks for sure. I think everybody should check out this record. And please, let's get into this interview, huh?
Let's go.
It's going on.
That's great.
Benny, would you like to sing? Would you like to sing her in?
Welcome to the fucking program. Welcome.
Wow.
Kick up your feet and relax.
I can't resist the little toys that they supply. That's like for an actual like podcast. Like that's what you're supposed to use with your, if you want, I guess. It's built into into this.
I think we just started something new. I kind of like this, like, broody piano music to come into a podcast.
Are you gonna sing every time?
Yeah, sure.
All right, let's practice.
If you lay it out, you lay out softballs for me like that, I'm gonna sing. But now I'm actually already like, I'm preemptively embarrassed about the voice I use, because I think I use like my high whiny voice that I can use sometimes, and I wish I went a little deeper, you know.
Right,
so
well,
I'll learn for next podcast to give it a little Teddy Pendergrass.
Yeah, right, I don't know if you know this, but musicians usually rehearse those kinds of things. I realized that was spontaneous. I dropped the
Zoe
piano.
I bet Zoe doesn't have to. She's a real singer, you know?
Thank you.
If you heard that piano, what would you have went with, like, style-wise to get us in here? You don't have
you know,
to sing,
I actually only got the, you know, the last part of the piano music. My volume wasn't working yet. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
So you don't have to sing, but what do you think?
It's like such a mood.
Yeah.
Okay, you know what? I'm feeling
forever.
Like, yeah, totally. I feel like it totally has like a early 2000s, like teen drama.
Oh, like, yes, you're right.
Vibes, you know?
That would be it. Mm.
So what's
coming in with the dark teen dramas.
What's the first thing we can talk about as far as dark teens go?
So what's going on? Are we starting right now? This begins?
We're in this? We are in.
Oh, cool.
Benny and I started without you. I don't know if you noticed.
Yeah.
I think I just figured that out. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Well, I don't know. Where do you guys want to start with
that? Well, it quickly went from two old hags, being me and Brad, talking about our bum rotator cuffs.
Yeah.
And saying that I'm sometimes intimidated talking to young women because I'm like, you know, oh, I woke up with a bad rotator cuff this morning. And I'm like, I bet you didn't, you know?
You know, I actually like for a moment thought that I threw my back out moving some stuff an hour ago, and I'm 26. So, you know, I might understand a little bit.
Got to go in with your knees. Got to go with the knees.
Yeah.
So what's going on? You're moving?
Oh, yeah. I'm moving these next few weeks.
Oh, out of Philly?
From where to where?
Oh, I'm staying in Philly. I'm just moving from South Philly to West Philly. So
nice. Quick South move. Philly. South Philly's just getting a little too hipster these days.
It's funny because I feel like people would say that about West Philly, actually. But no, yeah, my landlord's just selling our house.
One of those deals.
Yeah, one of those deals.
Obviously, one of the big jumps for you has been, you know, like the obviously, sonically going into this new record. So I was going to ask at some point, like how you plan to deliver these songs live. And it sounds like there is going to be a different vibe. So what's your plan going into it?
You know, we're going to use backing tracks for the first time. And I am very worried about that because it's all new territory for me. But yeah, we're going to use backing tracks and in-ear monitors and things and just throw a little more keys on stage. I mean, we've always kind of like functioned as an emo band.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's exciting to kind of branch out in that way.
So you're going to do backing tracks along with the full band still.
Yeah, for sure. So we're going to have like a 5-piece band. We usually go between like a 4- and 5-piece band and, yeah. Just add some backing tracks in this time. There's a lot going on this new record. Yeah. It would almost be like impossible to recreate live, but
right.
I just like love all of the layers that we are working with. So I'm like, I want them all to be there as much as possible, at least.
That's awesome. And what's the crew you're going to have playing live? Because I know you've had some switches through the years, and I even saw you posted something the other day about, is it like, not trusting anyone, or I saw it in an interview. You're like finding new bandmates when you don't trust anyone. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah. So like, what's going on there? Like, you know, who do you trust?
You know, okay. So that might've been a little bit of a salty tweet. I actually am maybe too trustworthy.
I see.
And that's probably where my trust issues are coming with this whole searching for a new bandmate situation. But yeah, I mean, we had someone who was going to play bass for us for our upcoming stuff, and he just got like busy with, you know, like real people job stuff. Not that playing music isn't a real job, but you know,
I definitely know a better job than
playing in a baby band. So
no. That guy's a sellout.
No, he got a pretty good music job, actually. So I'm happy for him. And yeah, unfortunately, it just like didn't pan out. So looking for someone else to play bass for us right now.
And is it, you know, any of the same people you've used in the past, or like a totally new crew?
Yeah, it's actually right now, it's all people that I've used in the past.
Cool.
My drummer and my guitarist both played with me on the Mannequin Pussy tour. They have bands called Beach Bod and Puppy Angst. And yeah. And then
those
my
are two,
keyboard
two
player,
of the best names I've heard in one fail swoop. That's really good. Wow.
Yeah, they have great band names. They're sweeties. I love playing with them. And we're bringing back our old keyboard player, Kaylin. And she has a band called Wilma Laverne Minor.
Cool.
Yeah, it's kind of like country pop stuff. So yeah, just looking to fill that last little part.
And all, is it like Philly people, or you you're going national.
Oh, it's all Philly people except for Kaylin, who's actually from Montana.
Oh, shit.
Which is pretty wild. But yeah, I mean, I've done a bunch of tours with her in the past, and I actually like met her on a DIY tour maybe like 2016 or 2017. And we were like playing a house show together, and I heard her like sound checking downstairs, and I was like, who is this person? Oh, wow. Like, I need to play music with her.
Cool.
And yeah, we just had so many good times on tour before, so we decided to link it back up.
Is she like a born and bred Montanian? I don't know.
I wonder what the word for that is. Yeah, Montanian. yeah, she is. She is.
What's the
vibe? She's from Missoula.
That's like a rarity to meet, like meet and spend time with like a true Montanian, which I'm now calling it. I don't care if it's Montanian. Right. Yeah.
No, you're right.
Can she rustle cattle? That's my
yeah. Question. Like, is the vibe totally different than like an East Coaster?
Oh, 100%. I don't know if she can wrestle cattle, but I would be like really surprised if she couldn't, honestly. She's definitely a cowgirl on the low.
Nice.
So, yeah.
That's awesome. That sounds exciting. So I know you live in Philly now, and I couldn't really see anything about like where you were from, but I did notice you mentioned something about your father listening to the radio, and I believe it was the Philly radio station. So are you like a true like Philly area native?
Yeah, I am. I think the radio station would have been WXPN.
That's it. Which yeah. is still the radio station, right?
Oh, it totally is. Yeah. It's uh-huh. the radio station.
Like the one, yeah.
Yeah, but I grew up in Montgomery County. So I grew up in a town called Orland.
Okay.
So like northwest suburbs of Philly.
Gotcha. Yeah. And what was that like?
It was like suburbs of Philly. I don't know. Not much to share there. I went to a really tiny high school.
Yeah.
Just a classic little suburban town, to be real. But
is it known for anything? Like, you know, like, last episode, I realized through, you know, some Googling that West Orange, New Jersey is known for hats. Yeah. Like, is your town known for anything?
You know, it wouldn't even be fun to get into on a podcast. It's not anything good.
Wait, well, that sounds like it's worth getting into. Yeah. Yeah.
No, you know, it might be too dark. Lots of depressing stories from like my hometown.
Oh, don't get Benny started. Oh,
but yeah,
no.
we don't need to get into it. Oh, it's too
Brad, what
dark.
Are you doing? Brad, you I brought you too animal. Far. This is, but you know, this is the point. I want to go dark as early as possible. What are we going to talk about?
That's guitar why you talk to emo bands. The whole time? I mean, we're definitely not going to talk about guitar sounds the whole time. I won't let it get that far.
Can I have one creepy story about your hometown?
Okay.
The lightest one. The one we might be able to sardonically laugh at afterwards.
Oh, man. The lightest one? Is there a light one out of the dark ones? Let me think of a good creepy story that isn't as dark as it can get.
Anything haunted?
Oh, yes. Actually, my childhood home was definitely haunted.
Ooh.
I wouldn't say that my town was known for my childhood home being haunted, but it's definitely haunted.
So you grew up with ghosts?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Oh, how did you know? Like, was it just like your whole family knew, or you had some kind of inkling towards it?
No, my whole family knew for sure.
Whoa.
I was actually telling a story the other day. Like, there was one year on Christmas where I like woke up on Christmas morning and I was like, Mom, it was so nice that like grandma came over last night and she like read to me before bed. And my mom was like, your grandma was not here last night. And I was like, yes, she was. She sat at the end of my bed and read me a Christmas story.
Whoa.
And we were always suspicious that it was like an old couple that was haunting the house because there was a woman who lived across the street who was best friends with the couple that lived in the house before us. And it was like an older couple that passed away.
Ooh. And what, like, how old were you? How old were you when you're getting read Christmas stories?
Oh, I must have been like, at that point, I was probably like 5 or 6.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I was very little, but I do remember it. Like, I do remember that. And so I just remember hearing like doors open and close and drawers opening and stuff like while my mom wasn't home.
Is it like kind of a cranky house? Like it's got some creaks?
You know, it wasn't too old of a house, but yeah, it definitely was like hardwood floors type of, you know.
I did just hear recently, I don't want to like blow the bubble and scare you, but I did just read something recently that apparently there's a connection between like very old houses and ghost sightings, but not for the reason you would think, which is the fact that many people died there or something. It's the fact that someone basically made the case that they all have carbon monoxide poisoning. And like, and the fact, like,
the houses?
Yeah. So like seeing things, you know, seeing things that aren't there, and hearing things and, being extra paranoid are all like symptoms of carbon monoxide poisoning. So they're basically making the case that like no one's ever seen a ghost. We've all been just getting like gassed, you know?
Honestly, I believe it.
I mean, believe it as much as anything, right?
But you don't ever walk in a house and just like immediately be like, you know, I'm getting a bad vibe in here. Something's not right.
Automatically carbon monoxide. Yeah, now I think I'm just like immediately high. Like,
you know? Yeah, that's what happens when you walk into my house too.
No, I know.
not with carbon monoxide. Yeah.
No, I do believe it. I've basically been like run out of every basement I've ever been in.
Yeah.
You know, like I got into a shouting match with a ghost at my old house in New Brunswick. I always felt something funky. It was like this really creepy old basement, but I had my drums down there and we had band practice down there. And, you know, during band practice, I didn't really care. You know, I had some back, but, you know, I'd go down sometimes like middle of the day and play drums and, you know, feel kind of freaked out and push through it. And one day I was down there and I was really grooving. I had like my headphones in. I don't remember what I was playing, but I was having fun. And like, I just thought I saw something and I got that like rush of cold and really, you know, freaked out that I just saw a ghost. And it was the first time I was just kind of like mad at it. And I like put down my sticks. I'm like, what do you want? You know, like, just talk to me. I'm like, is it too loud? Do you want me to play something else? I'm like, are you an Eagles fan? Like, just tell me what's going on and I'll help you out, you know?
And suddenly there was a voice and it said, you're speeding up the chorus.
Not my He's tempo. But I don't know. God. I believe it. Brad, you grew up in weird places, did you? You must have seen some ghosts.
I've never seen a ghost. I've never had any sort of experience like that. But I did, when I was a teenager, meet a girl, spend the summer with her. She was older. She was like, my dad had this like field school, but it was essentially like camp. But she was a college student, but she had these ghost stories of growing up with a ghost. And the way she presented it was so incredibly mad. Like, it was so obvious that she just took it for granted that she had grown up with this ghost from an early age, seen it several times. And it was just her whole entire like way of presenting it made me realize that there's definitely something going on. Like it was, she wasn't trying to freak me out. You know, she was just like, yeah, this was the deal. Like since I was a little girl, there was this person that lived in our house and we saw her every so often. And it was pretty.
And intense. Then you saw her huff carbon monoxide from a balloon. Like,
yeah. I saw her huffing glue out in the parking lot. No.
Yeah.
nitrous tank in the house.
But I've definitely heard a few, you know, stories from people that I trust enough at this point to know that, yeah, there's shit going on, man. Who knows what it is, you know?
Can I admit something to both of
totally.
You?
You're high.
No, not high. Not high. I don't like to be high for podcasts. But years ago, I'll spare the details, but I'm almost certain I had a sexual encounter with a ghost.
Oh, we have to hear this.
I mean, it's a little hard to explain.
Oh.
You know, because it was very in the moment.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. But I don't know. I don't even know how to get into it. But the short of it.
Yeah.
That's not an insult to myself. The short of it is that I was staying at a friend's house this was when like Gaslight had just gone full time. Mm-hmm. And that first couple years, I wasn't keeping a place at home. So I was just like, I had a storage space and I was just like flopping wherever I could in New Jersey. And a friend of mine had just bought a house with his new wife. And they had like this little side to the house, like a, you know, it had its own door and a stairway going up to kind of like a creepy room. And I was allowed to stay there. And they told me it was haunted. And it was definitely haunted. I mean, it felt super fucked up. So either, again, to reiterate, I was either super high on gasoline and carbon monoxide, or this actually happened. And one night, to the point, I felt someone grab my leg on the way up the stairs one night in that place. And I was up in the room. I was kind of feeling vibey. Yeah, there it is. And I felt something like a kind of like a Ghostbusters Sigourney Weaver thing going on, you know? She's like, but what, and then, but it was the
you
one time
I was like,
wait, I'm not nervous. I'm like, I think whatever's around here, like, wants to be around. And then I was like, ooh. And then I don't know. It was just that kind of night. I was like, yo, just go with it. And I'm pretty sure I'm either like totally hallucinating in the dark by myself, or something happened. A little hanky panky with a ghost.
Oh my goodness. What is that? Have you ever seen that documentary Love and Saucers?
No.
What's that
about? You might want to watch it after the story you just told me. It's just a documentary about this painter. I cannot remember his name, but he basically is telling these stories of all of his paintings, which are based around his encounters with an alien woman who he like had sexual encounters with. Whoa. And like lost his virginity to.
Man,
that sounds interesting.
I could see it. You know, like you look at some of these old, like, you know, biblical paintings and the, you know, the stuff that some of these old artists in Europe did. I'm like, you were either like so fucking drunk on absinthe, whatever kind of weird drugs you people were doing at the time, or like this really wacky stuff was going on, you know? But like, yeah, it does seem consistent over the years that either we are consistently being visited, right, by the paranormal or the spiritual, or people have been just getting super fucked up for like thousands of years on different things that make them see other things, you know?
I mean, I want to know what they're taking, because I've been taking some shit over the years.
And you haven't had sex with a ghost yet?
I haven't gotten to have ghost sex yet. It's been a lonely quarantine. Like,
this is the wrong drugs. Listen, Big Pharma is never going to give us anything that's going to take us to the other side, you know? They don't want us on the other side.
Yeah.
So I think if you want to go to that side, it's got to be drugs not given to you by like Pfizer or something. Have you tried like ayahuasca or like any of those kinds of drugs? Like,
I actually have not.
Are you in, or would you be in, open to something like that?
You know, I might be. I definitely like shrooms. I like acid.
Nice.
Is it appropriate to talk about this on the podcast?
Oh, very much so. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
cool. Yeah. I like both of these things. Mom, if you're listening.
Sorry,
you
Mom.
Know this.
She was probably born after Timothy Leary. It's okay.
Yeah.
So how do you find those experiences like in connection with music? Like, are you able to do things with writing or creativity when you're on that stuff?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I love, especially like the end of a trip, I'll just like take out my little iPad GarageBand setup.
Mm-hmm. Oh shit, yeah.
And just like beeps and boops. I really like I don't know, making like fun, like video game kind of sounding synth parts. And that's always fun to do on acid. but I would say like, if it helps me with anything, it's more just like a spiritual thing than an actual like creative thing, you know?
Yeah. Does it like knock down any walls for you where you can like see anything about yourself, like clear or other people or how you want to write about it? Does any like anything get knocked down as a result?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I feel like it like helps me see my whole entire, I don't know, all of my emotions more clearly. And I always like doing it like with my best friend. So we tend to like, you know, reach conversations that we wouldn't normally be able to have. And you know, that's, you could probably tell from my lyrics that that's a lot of what I like to talk about, you know, like personal stuff.
Sure.
So yeah, I would say so.
Yeah. I was going to ask about that. I mean, I know you're consistently writing about your own stories, almost to the point where like, you know, I think I read for that, the Get In Tune song, you actually saw, or I'm sorry, the We're So In Tune song, you actually saw like an ad that sparked the idea for that. And it's kind of like often anecdotal, like something in life just sparks a song.
Yeah, totally. I mean, most of it really does come from like my conversations with people or just like, you know, everyday things like that. I would say I've actually kind of had a hard time. Sorry, my dog is like jumping on me right now. I've had kind of a hard time over quarantine because I think so much of what I write about is just like based off of, you know, like interacting with other people or like just interacting with the world in general. But yeah, We're So In Tune was, I just saw a sign outside of, I think it was just like a mechanic shop. And it just said, Get In Tune on it. And I was like, I was like a little drunk and I started thinking about the Bruce Springsteen, I'm on Fire video. And I was like, oh, I'm inspired right now. So it's weirdly actually inspired by that video. I wouldn't necessarily say 100% the song, but the video inspired it a little bit.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you think
I'm talking like to some Jersey boys in here, aren't I?
Oh, not Brad.
Yeah.
But Benny, Brad, like, Benny more than makes up for my non-Jersey boy-ness.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like so New Jersey that even Bruce Springsteen's like too cool for me, you know?
Like that makes like, sense, yeah.
I need some deeper cuts. It's like okay, when you live valid. In New York City, you know, you don't visit the Empire State Building.
Yes.
It's like that kind of thing. Like it was just always there, but I didn't really care that much until, you know, I wound up in a band that was compared to it every day. And then I started to care about it a lot.
Yeah.
By default.
Of course. I mean, I guess people like naturally make that comparison with y'all like being from a similar area.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a long story, but it's like, but it was literally from the get-go. I mean, I think if you just have like a gravelly voice and you're from New Jersey, you're just in the pocket, you know, like you can't help it.
Yeah, for real.
I was wondering, like, you know, you had a couple stories about, you know, being in a car with friends and seeing something and that sparked the story. You know, you've been writing songs for a while now. And do you find yourself where, you know, it used to just kind of, you know, fall in your lap, something like that? Now, do you find yourself kind of like looking for it where, you know, you're out and you're in a unique situation. You're like, oh, I got to find like a song here.
Honestly, yeah. I feel like it was so much more natural, like maybe a couple years ago, but at the same time, like as much as I feel like I had, you know, an easier songwriting process and like had an easier time coming up with lyrics, I do feel like my lyrics have improved because I'm like taking the time with them more now, if that makes sense.
Sure.
But I don't know. I would say that pretty much every song that I write starts with a moment like that.
Hmm. So you think at some point, especially post pandemic, like you might have to really go out there and like create those moments?
Oh yeah. I'm trying to create a lot of moments.
How so?
Many moments. I don't know. We'll see. We're going to find out, I guess. I mean, shows are coming quick, I guess.
That's true. But, so what's the first one back for you? Is it going to be the Riot Fest?
Actually, no, but I'm so excited for that. We're playing a show in Millersville with Mannequin Pussy.
Oh, cool.
On July 31st. And yeah, that's going to be our first show back. And then we have some tour dates that we'll be announcing very soon.
Awesome.
Perhaps next week.
And you're pretty stoked about the Riot Fest?
Yeah, I'm super stoked about it. I mean, we haven't gotten to play a lot of bigger festivals like that. So it's exciting to kind of like be able to get into that whole circuit.
Sure. Well, as someone who's played a few, try to keep your expectations low for the show itself.
Yeah, I mean, outdoor shows are very hit or miss, aren't
yeah.
they?
Yeah. Yeah. There's like 180 different variables that are just like impossible to overcome, you know, like,
of course,
like sometimes you just wind up playing when it's just like disgustingly hot out and nobody yeah, wants sometimes. To be outside at all. So it doesn't even matter how good you play, you know,
yeah.
or just time slots or who you're playing against or a rogue sound person who just has no idea, rogue monitor person, a rogue anyone. Yeah. I mean, it's those, but often I found that like the actual, you know, the things that you would worry about in a club, like people don't even barely notice, you know, in like a festival.
Oh yeah, for sure. They're busy yeah. with something else.
Yeah. You're getting drunk yeah, for and sure. they just want to have fun, really. That's why like
yeah.
Gogo Bordello is like the greatest festival band ever, you know?
Aren't they playing this year?
It makes sense.
Honestly, I think they are. Oh, I remember seeing them at the Electric Factory with Man Man when I was in high school.
Yeah.
That was a gig.
It's an intense show.
Yeah.
But you give those people, you give a like a, you know, a field full of white people that gypsy punk beat. And it's like catnip. It's catnip. They just can't help but start jumping in the air and going crazy, you know?
The Hoopers.
Yeah. I once saw one of the smartest things I ever saw at a festival was I played a festival in Belgium with, we didn't play with him. He was like on the festival and Snoop Dogg played. And
beautiful.
Because Snoop Dogg's a pimp, he had booked two festivals in one day. So he was collecting double pay what? For that day. And he played this one in Belgium. Yeah. Somehow he managed to get on the bill at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon in order to do both festivals. And I'm assuming he got full money for both. And, you know, so it's like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It's in like Belgium. You know, the crowd's looking a little, just a little white and undrunk and not really there yet. And I'm watching side stage and, you know, his whole show is insane. There's just like a random like stone 65-year-old man dancing up there. Another guy with like a giant inflatable like penis and balls just running around. One guy just rolling blunts. I'm pretty sure that was like his job. It was just to like roll blunts and hand them around. And I see Snoop like turn around to his DJ and like say something and like nod his head. And I'm like, oh, what's about to happen? And 5 seconds later, the DJ starts playing Jump Around by House of Pain. And all of a sudden, this Belgian field, like I said, it's like catnip. They couldn't help it. They're just like, ah, you know, they start losing their shit, jumping up and down. And, you know, Snoop just goes into the rest of the set. I'm like, oh, my God. He's a genius puppet master. He knew. Yeah. He knew just what they needed, you know?
He knew the solution.
He did. It was like some weird, mysterious variable that Snoop figured out, you know? Much respect.
That. Also, yeah, so much respect for that.
I know. It's so cool.
Well, maybe you should keep that in your roster just in case you need to pull it out.
What? Jump around?
Yeah.
I mean, fuck, the shows I play, it'll probably work too.
Oh my God. We were talking about using the Jeopardy theme song as our walkout song.
Oh, that's cool.
Tour.
Never yeah. heard anything even close to that. That's pretty rad.
I mean, white people love that shit too. So.
They do. And I bet there's like a nice
the Jeopardy theme song probably, it probably brings a lot of people to like a place.
Yeah. Oh, it totally does. Yeah. I mean, we thought of this the other day, actually, because we went to like an outdoor bar the other day and everyone was watching Jeopardy at the bar and we were like bonding with the table next to us about Jeopardy.
Yeah. So I bet you play that and like, I think this is a really good idea, actually, because someone's going to like all of a sudden be like, oh, I remember watching like Jeopardy with my parents when I was 7. And then all of a sudden they're in this just like great mood to watch your show.
For sure. It warms your little heart.
Oh, man, you're on your way to being, this is Snoop Dogg level fan psychology. This is good.
I mean, if I could have someone like rolling me blunts on stage and passing blunts around, that would actually be ideal for me too. So
listen, you just got front of house. Blunt technician is the next one to hire.
Yes, 100%.
Listen, I want to do a quick segment on the show here we call Mystery Friend.
Ooh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and fished up a story from one of your friends. And I'd like you to tell me a little bit about this. And then you need to guess which one of your friends told me.
Oh my God.
So I heard from someone that you used to think of a great band name and hoard Bandcamp URLs. Like come up with a great band name and file all the URLs. And I was wondering if this is true. And if you can remember any great band names that you had out there or URLs that you stole or if you got any on deck. So what's this all about?
Oh my God. I wonder who told you that. I mean, it was not a secret. I was doing it for a long time. Okay. I do know that you had Julia from Rat Boys on here though. And I do recall doing that on the tour we did with Rat Boys, but who knows who it was. Let's see. Cool Knife. That was one of them. I was pretty set on using that. Uh-huh. Gnarly Ray Jepsen.
yes. Good.
Kink Shamer.
Nice. Wow.
These are good. Nacho Baby is one of them. I definitely saved some like actual band names though, like some like bigger band names. You know, I can't actually really remember most of them now, though. It's been years since I've done it because I was like, you know what? I've totally like tried to make a Bandcamp before and someone has taken the URL. And as much as it was funny for the time, I don't want to hoard too many of them, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Because
people might need them out there.
Yeah. Someone out there in Nebraska is like, oh my God, finally, we thought of the perfect band name. And then
it's funny because the person who named my band was from Nebraska.
Ah, strange. So you stopped doing that. How many do you think you have in total?
Oh, God. I would guess probably like 40.
What?
I was doing it for a long time, actually. It was a couple years long process, but I've given up now.
You're retired.
I'm retired.
It's like when Big Pharma like comes up with, you know, how they have like 1,000 weird, you know, Albutron or whatever. Like they have all of these things patented and ready to go.
Yeah.
So this could be like a money making thing for you at some point, right? I mean, coming up with bands is hard.
Totally. But here's the thing. My band name has been taken on like every social media website that I've tried to sign up for.
Okay.
So once I started realizing that it was happening to me,
maybe I got some chill.
Yeah, I felt a little bad. I felt a little bad about it.
That's really funny. So this is commonly known. So it'd be a little tough to guess who told me.
Oh yeah, let's see.
I'll give you a hint.
Yeah, give me a hint.
Which is, in my mind, what I did is cheating. I feel a little dirty, like I cheated Mystery Friend.
Ooh, I'm intrigued.
Why can't I think of who you're talking about?
I'm going to lay it out.
I smoked too much weed.
I went to your publicist.
Oh, of course.
I asked Jamie.
Jamie!
It was Jamie. Jamie gave you up.
Jamie put me on blast.
Jamie Coletta. She gave you up. I had hit up a couple other people who are like, yeah, she's super cool and super nice, but I don't really have any weird stories. And I'm like, oh.
Aw! No one had any weird stories about me? You didn't hit up the right people.
I don't think I hit up the right people. Because even you're like, you Julia from Rat Boys. I'm like, oh, I could ask her. Like, there's all these people. I was reaching. We don't really spin in the same circles, Zoe. So
no, we don't, but maybe we should.
Oh, can I tell you guys something?
Yeah.
Currently, about like 3 feet away from me is a mom and a dad goose and three goslings.
Oh.
Walking right by me right now. And they look so fuzzy. And they have these cute little butts that just like waddle around.
Are they walking past your window?
No, Benny is a gnome and he lives in the woods. He doesn't have an actual home.
I moved to the forest, Zoe. Yeah.
He lives under a tree, under a giant mushroom.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
It's like the Shire.
That's the dream, isn't it? To live under a giant mushroom. Similarly, last night, I was hanging out in my backyard and a raccoon tried to approach me.
Uh-oh.
And I was like, hey, this is pretty cute. And then as it got closer, it was like kind of, you know, scratching at itself, walking towards me. And I was like, maybe we're not friends.
No.
I ran inside. I was like, holy shit. I have to send you this video I took of it. It's
Please.
It's not looking so great.
No.
I felt a little bad for him.
Is it like one of the rodents of unusual size? Was it making any weird noises or anything?
No, it actually wasn't. It actually seemed really cat-like and sweet. But he seemed to be...
up to something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't trust that. Raccoon walks up to you in Philly?
Yeah.
He's about to pull something on you.
Yeah.
I mean, that or, you know, we were connecting. We were vibing.
Maybe. You know? Or the next thing you're going to hear was run your pocket, Zoe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wouldn't trust a raccoon in the middle of Philly if it was walking up to you. That doesn't sound right.
I have more trust for a raccoon than a possum, though. I will say that.
Yes. What about a person?
You know what? I would say a person would be... in between
a possum and a raccoon.
Between them.
I trust a person a little more than a possum.
Yeah.
A little less than a raccoon. Okay. Possums have those tiny sharp teeth, so
yeah. They kind of look like they're they're kind of eel like in a way.
They are weird.
Yes, totally.
It's true.
Also their tails are very bald.
If there is an animal that could walk up to you that you would just implicitly trust the most, who would it be?
I would have to say a turtle.
Oh my God, that's perfect.
Yeah. I think a turtle would be the most trustworthy. Although one time we did stay at someone's house on tour and my drummer got peed on by this person's turtle.
Oh, like a house turtle?
I mean, that's about the worst. Yeah, that's about the worst that could happen though, right? Is that they pee on you?
I think a snapping turtle could take some fingers off and
that
stuff.
That is true.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I was just warned of that by a neighbor.
It is
true. He was telling me this thing. He's like, yeah, we got some turtles. I'm like, oh, great, turtles. He's like, don't let your kids around it. He'll probably eat their fingers. I'm like, oh.
Oh, my God.
Oh, okay.
They live so long, too. Tortoises, they live forever.
Yeah.
I've been asked before if I was to be able to choose what I'd like to be in the next life. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure it would be a sea turtle.
Aww.
It just seems like such a pleasant life. You know, like they live forever. They kind of just hang back in the cut. They don't really have too many natural predators. They're just chilling. They're like the straight, like stoners of the sea, you know?
Well, yeah, I guess you got to stop using plastic straws in this life.
Yeah.
To get the good karma for the sea turtle life, oh, you know? Shit.
Yeah. I never thought that I have to pay into this.
Yeah. I feel like that might be the vibe.
Okay. I'll be more environmentally active. So, random turn here, okay?
Yeah.
Because I thought this might be fun. If you say, who's your, is there a favorite director you have?
I would say it's my friend Josh Cole.
Okay. So say Josh, oh, he works on your videos, right?
He does.
Yeah, okay. So say Josh gives you a call tomorrow. He's like, listen, Zoe, I know it's random, but an angel investor just gave me like $3 million to make a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I want to make a movie about one night of your teenage life.
Okay.
What night would you choose? And who would you cast to play yourself?
Oh, wow. First off, I can't really think of any celebrities that I look like. I did have a lot of people tell me I looked like Chloe Grace Moretz when I was in high school.
Okay.
So maybe I would cast her. And let's see, what night would I pick? Here's the thing is, I was actually talking to one of my friends about this the other day, and we were like, watching Skins in high school made us think that our high school lives were normal, and they were not. Let's see. There's a lot to choose from. There was a night. Okay, this story's kind of dark, but there was a night where I did acid with my sister and two of our friends. And we had a really, really fun time. And we were like trading sweaters around, and we thought we were like trading emotions. And it was one of the most fun nights. And then the next day I smoked K2. You guys know anything about this stuff? Are you guys too old for this?
Is it ketamine?
It's like one of those things where I was,
you know about it?
Like, what the fuck are you kids doing? Yeah. Like, that's what I remember it as, but I never did it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, what was that? You didn't, because
that was bad.
It was fully like
pretty bad.
The biggest nightmare ever. Yes. It was such a nightmare.
Oh no.
It was pretty bad, but I would say that like, it might be interesting enough to make a movie out of, because I was very, I was like tripping balls, and everything looked like Rugrats. Like, my friend was sitting across from me, and I was just like looking at her, and I was like, oh my God, she looks just like Tommy Pickles right now. I'm going to throw up. And, the fucked up thing that happened was one of my friends, started actually like getting sick, and we had to like go to the hospital. And, I remember being in the back of the ambulance, and like sitting in the ambulance, and the guys were like, wow, this girl seems like she would be really cool if she wasn't so fucked up right now about me. And I felt like I was in an Above the Influence commercial, because I was like, they don't know I can hear them. Right. So yeah.
That's.
And apparently there was another kid who was in the hospital that night for smoking K2. It was very much like trendy in my neighborhood.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What year was that? That it was at its peak there?
A lot more to the story, but not worth getting into. Kind of gross.
I think it's worth getting into.
I would say it was probably 2011.
Okay.
But yeah, no, it was actually really scary. Like, when like the, paramedics came in, because they had this like tube that they were like hooking my friend up to throw up into.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I was like tripping balls. So it just looked like there were like weird, like tentacles and shit like flowing into my living room.
Oh.
And my mom was like on a date or something like that, and my house was always like the party house when I was growing up, and she was not very happy when she arrived home. But yeah, we were planning on actually having a party that night. And what had happened was we smoked this K2 before our friends came over to have a party with us. And then they like drove by our house while we were like getting into an ambulance.
Whoa.
So, yeah. There's my dark high school
story. So they didn't knock on the door.
Wah, yeah. Wah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I don't know.
I heard like, so did you have kind of like rock and roll parents? Because, you know, I read like your father got you into Liz Phair and, you know, was kind of like music was around a lot. Like, what was the vibe with like, you know, your house and music? Was it always kind of a part of your background?
Yeah, it really was. My mom grew up going to a lot of shows. My mom was a painter when I was growing up. And so she was very much involved in the art scene. And my dad, he was just a big like indie radio guy. So I got into a lot of like my like earlier like emo and indie stuff through my dad. And yeah, kind of same with my mom, but more on like the indie side. Like, I remember my mom showing me like the Breeders and Cat Power and stuff like that. And
oh, cool.
My dad showing me like Bright Eyes and Death Cab. So, yeah, my parents were divorced when I was young. So, kind of like raised from two separate parents who were like into the music scene, but weren't actually musicians.
Right. Right. And when did you,
Oh, I was just giggling, because that's what I was about to say. My mom, she had a lot of friends who played music and, you're good. She actually, got my sister a guitar when she was like 9 or 10 years old, which would have made me like 7 or 8 years old. And I had always wanted to be a rock star, but I never played an instrument. Like I just would like run around our house singing all the time. So it was like kind of always a thing that I wanted to do since I was very, very little.
Cool.
But by the time my sister got a guitar, I was asking about playing guitar too. And my mom was like, you can't play guitar. You have to play bass because your sister's playing guitar. And I want you guys to be able to start a band together if you play an instrument.
All right.
But I think she was really just probably trying to make sure that like we didn't get jealous of each other.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Looking back on it. But it is still kind of a cool idea. Smart. But my mom was always like very supportive in that way.
You can't subjugate one child to bass, though. Like, that's not cool. Then you're going to wind up with a pecking order issue regardless.
She did it.
Yeah.
Like, she did it.
Because you know the guitar player is going to find a way to talk shit.
She actually convinced me really easily, though. She just was like, I remember her just telling me like, oh, it's so cool when like a tall girl plays bass. Like, you should play bass. You would look so cool playing bass. She really had me like convinced. And then I remember maybe it was like 5th or 6th grade, my mom took me to see Snow Patrol and Silver Sun Pickups opened up that show.
Oh, cool.
And they had a female bass player and they still do, I guess. I mean, I haven't seen, heard any of their new stuff or anything or kept up with them much, but that was like one of the first times I was like, oh my God, like I actually can do this. Like, girls do play bass in bands. And I actually thought I was so much cooler than everyone who played guitar because I was like different. So she kind of made it happen for me. She gave me a little bit of an ego when I needed it.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. You got to have it just to have that confidence just to do it. Right. And you're really into Liz Phair, right? Like she is a big.
Yeah, of course. I was a bit of a nerd growing up, so it was needed.
Yeah. Like let's say someone's on here who doesn't know much about Liz Phair. Like where should they start?
Where should they start? Oh my goodness. I started listening to Liz Phair. I guess I'll tell my story because this is how I got into her. So maybe I mean, I could be totally wrong because I'm pretty sure that it got a zero on Pitchfork, her self-titled record.
Oh, God.
Like straight up a 0.0.
Brutal.
But I love it. And I know so many people who also love it. And a lot of her hits are there. Like Why Can't I is on that record. Red Light Fever's on that record. Extraordinary's on that record. Three of her biggest hits are on there. But for some reason, it's like her most hated record. Huh. However, when I was like maybe 8 years old, my dad got me an iPod Shuffle. And I went to his house one weekend and he put some music on my iPod Shuffle. But all he put on it was the Liz Phair self-titled record. Which is really funny looking back on, because there's a lot of crazy lyrics on that record that an 8-year-old would not understand. Like there's there's some stuff on there like HWC. I was like, I don't know what she's talking about, but this totally rocks.
Huh.
It's about cum.
Oh, okay.
And and yeah, I feel like her song Little Digger was one of the first songs that I like remember actually crying to, like actually understanding and crying to. So yeah, I mean, it was a very influential record for me as a kid, and I would say to start there, but I know some people will say differently.
I can't believe Pitchfork gave a zero. Yikes.
Dude, I'm pretty positive it was a zero.
So fucked up. It's just so dismissive, you know? Like, come on.
Right?
What?
Like, come on.
Such jerks.
It's a good record, too. There's some major hits on there. Everyone knows Why Can't I is, like, one of the best radio hits of the early 2000s.
Listen, I can tell you from my own anecdotal experience, a record I put out that is certainly not the best record I ever made, and definitely one that the fewest people heard, got the highest rating on Pitchfork of any record I've ever made.
Fuck Pitchfork.
So really?
It doesn't matter.
Like I mean, it doesn't matter because it's just, you know, a couple people, you know? Like
the thing I always think is the one thing I've learned is that the person writing reviews for anything, for Pitchfork, for a magazine, they're usually like the people, they don't want to be writing reviews. Nobody does. They're people who want to be writing articles. They want to be writing books, you know? They want to
do write-ups.
Yeah, they don't want to like be like, here's 35 records. Come up with, you know, 46 adjectives for each of them. Like, it kind of sucks. So I think they just get bored and weird, and they forget the kind of power. They forget the power they have in a way, you know? It's like you forget you're actually like wielding a little bit of power over somebody else's creation, but you just do it so much and you get so bored that I think people like just kind of like forget, you know?
Yeah, you don't think about it. Yeah, I've actually never gotten a Pitchfork rating, and that's okay so far. I don't need one yet. I'm scared.
Even though you've never gotten a rating, they're still going to talk shit that you went pop.
I fucking hope that, because you know what, this is definitely the best record that I've written, so I'm not taking any shit on it, you know? Like,
no, it's great.
But no, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, they definitely do have you know, a bit of a thing for the emo community, so I could be betraying them.
Well, speaking of pop, I mean, you're kind of in the, you know, you're in the hook business, you know? Like every song in this record has like, seems to have a really great chorus and a great hook. And it's obviously, you know, a focal point of it. And, you know, I was wondering at this point, like, what's your process of creating hooks? And for you, are you melodies first? Are you words first? And when do those two things kind of like meet?
You know, it kind of depends on the song, whether it's melodies or words first. Lately, actually, especially on this record, it was a lot of instrumentals first, a lot of like writing beats and writing, you know, like chord progressions first and kind of just like whittling songs down, if that makes sense. Like writing a song with way too many lyrics and then picking all of the best parts and, you know, narrowing it down from there. That was a lot of my process. And yeah, I mean, did you ask something else?
Well, I was first it was about like the hooks and like, you know, kind of what your process of trying to find a hook and when you know you have one that you really like.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that was actually, so as I said earlier, like I really like just doodling around on GarageBand and making like fun little like video game sounding like twinkly synthy songs. And a lot of them actually started out there. A lot of the melodies were just like synth lines that I messed around with for like months.
so they actually started from the synth line first and then you put your vocal melody kind of over that.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, a ton of the vocal melodies were written that way, were written as synth lines. Because I have this like secret anxiety about people that I live with or my neighbors like getting annoyed with me about singing.
Right. Yeah.
So I'll just like sit there, I'll like come up with a vocal melody and then I'll like write it all out on keys. Okay. In GarageBand or in Logic, or I was using Reason a lot when I was working on this record as well. But yeah, I'll just like sit there and kind of nudge things around until they feel like they're in the right spot, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool.
It's kind of a weird process, but
I mean, works for you. I understand about, I know like I've had a couple of singers, even the guy, you know, Jared, who I sing with now is like, I think the people in my apartment think I'm crazy because I was recording vocals all day and they can't hear the music behind it. They just hear me screaming in my bathroom, right. You know? So I understand it would make you self-conscious.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, totally. And I've lived like, I've lived in the city for most of my life. So I've always been in like these like row home situations. Where I'm like, I don't want to be disrupting my neighbors who are like right at the other side of the wall or right. Like a lot of the time I really like to just like work in the middle of the night. I feel like that's when songs come out of me the best. And yeah, I definitely would never want to like wake someone up to them having to listen to my emo ass pop songs in my room.
It's nice. See, we're creating more ghost stories here.
Yeah.
So I know you worked with Andy Park on this new record, and when you know, when you were, I read that he added like a lot of instrumentation and a lot of different stuff. Were you figuring that out prior to recording? Were you in a lot of like pre-production together, or it was kind of when you got into the studio? It was like, oh, these are the changes I think would be cool, or things I'm going to add.
It was a little bit of a combination. We did some pre-production. We actually did pre-pro for a lot of the songs, but a lot of them were like, we did a lot of the session in Logic, and a lot of the stuff we were able to just bring over from my demo sessions because I do a lot of MIDI stuff myself. So yeah, there was a lot of pre-pro when it came to like me sending demos to Andy and him kind of like taking them apart and fixing them up. So yeah, we had some stuff to work with when we came into the studio, but a lot of it actually was partially written in the studio as well. So
nice. And how are you with like receiving that stuff? Are you pretty open to it, or do you have to build some trust with people to be able to kind of get into your songs like that?
I actually used to be like really, I had my guard up pretty high before. Like I would not let other people touch my songs for a long time. And right. I think that was kind of my downfall for a little bit was that I wasn't collaborating and stuff because I've always wanted to make music that sounds like this, but I've always known emo music. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so it really gave me the opportunity to try something new, and having Andy, you know, get into the songs, he was able to like give them the sound that I have been looking for a long time.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I'm really glad I trusted him.
Yeah.
I love that guy. He's great.
I know you had lots of people on the record, including friend of the program, Bartiz Strange.
We love him.
Yeah. How did you go about putting that together? Where did you get the ideas of who to bring in? And when you did you have ideas for them or you let them go in cold and bring in their own stuff?
Honestly, a lot of it was really just going in cold and bringing in their old stuff or own stuff, my bad. But, so we had a lot of collaborations on this record because, you know, as, I'm a solo artist, I have a band here now, but I've always just kind of had like touring lineups, learn the parts from my records, if that makes sense. And, for this record, Andy set up a whole live band for me made up of some pretty amazing people.
Oh, cool.
And so I had Sean Lane play drums from Pedro the Lion.
Wow.
And Jessica Dobson from Deep Sea Diver played bass and guitar. My friend Sebastian, who plays in a band called Apples with Moya and Cumulus, played guitar as well. My friend Derek Ted did a bunch of stuff. Al from Great Grandpa. Lots of great collabs, and a lot of them really were just based off of the fact that I had some friends in Seattle and I hadn't spent a lot of time in Seattle, and I just kind of went out to record there and popped around to like some shows while I was out there and kind of like built some collaborations out of that. Just out of hanging out with people and being like, hey, I'm here. Do you want to come record on my record?
Yeah, yeah.
Bartiz and Connor from Foxing, I added them to the record probably, I don't know, over last summer. And I actually just kind of hit them up and was just like, hey, do you want to sing on this? That's all I really did. I was just like interested in getting some harmonies from both of them.
Yeah.
And awesome. Just kind of told them to do whatever they wanted with it and threw them a couple ideas. But for the most part, like, they really figured it out on their own. And it was nice because they kind of did a similar thing for the songs, you know, they gave them a similar energy. Yeah, the first time I listened to both of them, I cried.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
When, especially when I listened to Bartiz on Twin Flame for the first time, I just like bawled my eyes out because it was a song that I've been working on for so long. I think I wrote it like right before we went on the Dashboard tour and released Sunset Blush, which would have been like, oh my God, is it bad that I forget? Was it 2018? Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it was 2018. So that song was sitting in the vault for a long time. And when Bartiz sang on it, it like felt like it was the right song for the first time.
Ah, that's awesome. So, he's a very,
he's a king.
He's a very, very special artist. I assume.
Yeah.
We're going to be hearing
We're
going to be hearing his name for a long time for sure. And a very chill guy, you know, he's one of those people. Yeah. I have this problem. I've told Brad before. Sometimes I get off interviews and I think I like made a new friend, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, really? I just interviewed this person. Like, they probably don't want to keep this going, you know? Like, he's one of those people. I'm like, yo, can I keep hitting you up a little? Cause I just think you're kind of great, you know?
Oh my God. He's totally one of those kinds of people. He is such like, I don't know. He's something special, isn't he?
Yeah. He's got a light around
him. He just
him,
blows
for sure.
me away.
Yeah. He's got
yeah
a light
he
around
absolutely
him.
Does. Yeah. He absolutely does.
Well, speaking of artists who have a light around them, I wanted to finish up here with something fun. Since you're a sort of native Philadelphian from the suburb, from the creepy ghost-ridden suburbs, I wanted to try to put together a Philadelphia music Mount Rushmore.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, so I know this is hard because there's more than I thought that are actually from Philly or claim to be from Philly. So at first, the Mount Rushmore, I wanted to be four, you know? I think for this exercise, we can include like bands as one, you know, just to make it easy. Like you don't need a separate face for like Hall and Oates, you know?
Of course. Yeah.
So is there anyone that like has to be on there for you? Like who represents Philly the most to you?
Oh my goodness.
I have a list of names if you want me to go through them.
You know, it's funny because I'm not even a crazy Kurt Vile fan, but the first thing I thought of was like Kurt Vile would be.
That's a good one.
On Mount Rushmore for sure. The Roots.
Uh-huh.
Definitely important. Who else? Dead Milkmen.
Yes. Ooh, good.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good.
I mean, should I fill one more? I might as well go all the way. Can we just throw, Soupy in there?
Sure.
Dan Campbell.
So we got the Mount Rushmore.
We need the DIY representation. You know?
Your Philly Mount Rushmore is Kurt Vile, The Roots, Dead Milkmen, and Soupy, which I think is rad. We did skip Patti LaBelle, Hall & Oates.
Yes, we did. Patti LaBelle is important. Well, you mentioned Hall & Oates. Yes.
Boys to Men, Chubby Checker, True. Jill Scott,
Of course.
Joan Jett,
mm-hmm.
Erykah Badu, personal favorite, Kid Dynamite, Ink and Dagger, some old hardcore bands.
Of course.
Cinderella. One for you, Brad. Jim Croce, Dr. Dog, Disco Biscuits, and my personal favorite, Teddy Pendergrass, Philadelphia's own, with the most sexually healing songs. He would have to be on mine. But I like this. That's a good Mount Rushmore.
It is.
Did you forget Meek Mill?
Oh, I did.
Oh, Meek Mill has to be on there. How could we forget? Yo, Meek Mill would just be... every face.
Well, who are you? Rushmore. Who are you kicking out? It's the everyone, classic exercise. Everyone. Who gets kicked
out? It's all Meek Mill.
Soupy.
Sorry, Soupy.
Sorry, you're out, Soupy, for Meek Mill.
Sorry, Soupy. No, we love you, Soupy.
At least we didn't get to Diplo. You know.
Oh yeah, we didn't have to go that far.
Yikes. Oh, that was fun. I like you. That was a good Mount Rushmore. And I actually didn't have Kurt Vile on my list. I'm disappointed. I did just see him in a funny skit of Portlandia, too, that I forgot he was in.
Oh, really?
So classic.
Yeah, he's like living at their house. Oh, my God, that skit kills me because never mind. Stupid. I realized the other day I was trying to explain an SNL skit to someone. I'm like, how can I be 40 years old and still be doing that? I knew it didn't work like 31 years ago to try to explain to someone something that happened on TV. And I almost just tried to do it again. But
it's getting okay. Old, Benny. You saved yourself.
I know. All right. Well, back to me and Brad talking about our rotator cuffs. But Zoe, that was fun. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so nice to talk to you guys.
Down.
That was fun.
That's
man.
My Jello. That's my Jello Biafra version of the guitars.
Oh, Jello.
Oh, Jello.
Silly guy.
Man, I love that Philly music Mount Rushmore. Who would have to be on it for you that got left off?
For me?
Yeah.
Personally?
Yeah.
I don't know that I know enough Philly artists.
Hall & Oates? You a Hall & Oates guy?
No. I mean, definitely.
Chubby Checker?
Roots for sure.
Sure. Easy.
I like the Kurt
Vile. Joe Jett.
I don't think I knew that Dead Milkmen were a Philly band for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true.
Joan Jett would be number one for me, though, I think. Joan Jett and who's the R&B guy?
Pendergrass?
Yeah. Teddy Pendergrass.
So you would go the Roots.
Joan Jett first. Joan Jett, Roots.
Joan Jett.
Pendergrass, and maybe
Dead Milkmen.
Yeah, I think
okay.
So.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
I know that there's somebody that I'm completely forgetting, though, that I probably love immensely.
But... I mean, I think I got the biggest names on this list.
Okay, yeah.
Like the Roots, Patti LaBelle, Hall & Oates,
Will Smith and Boys to Men being left out of Mount Rushmore is a little rough. I mean,
I think
Motown Philly might be like the most iconic Philadelphia song, right?
I think Will can, he's had enough success elsewhere that he can probably get by.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I feel like Sylvester Stallone should just be on by default, right? I mean, I personally would be remiss to not put Kid Dynamite on this list.
Yeah.
I do love Erykah Badu as well. I'm a pretty big Erykah Badu fan. You know me, I got to have Teddy Pendergrass on there. That's my guy, you know?
Yes, I know.
I mean, I can tell you who's made the most people have a lush, sweaty, silky, intimate evening in Philadelphia. And it's not fucking the Disco Biscuits, okay? It's Teddy Pendergrass.
Absolutely.
Let's get real.
Absolute.
But anyway, Zoe's got she's got some socials, right?
She, as she says in the podcast, she couldn't get Kississippi, but she got Kississippi PHL, and that's Instagram and Twitter. Follow her there. Definitely check out this new record and her previous stuff if you haven't listened to it. For us, you can give us a review on iTunes, a la Teddy Pendergrass.
Yes, please.
You can, if you really want to get involved, you can become a patron at patreon.com/goingofftrack. And, you know, then you're really part of the gang. You get some special bonus material. Get to chat with us every Thursday on our Thursday fireside chat. And I don't know. What else is going on, Benny? Anything?
Yeah, it's June 1st. I think by early July, I'll be willing to do these Discord chats with no shirt on. You know? That's my goal.
You getting ready to record?
I am.
Okay. No shows, though.
No shows. Okay. But it is incredibly, as we've discussed on this podcast before, I don't have enough self-respect or passion for my own condition to keep myself in like living condition for myself. So having a record to do has actually been very motivating for me to not be as disgusting about what I'm putting into my body and how I'm handling myself. So it's almost like I get into like training mode, and it's like the only way I know how to keep myself healthy is if I have like a musical milestone to get to, you know?
Right.
So basically I should never retire because I'm going to wind up like the mom from Gilbert Grape. If I stop having a job,
got to keep moving,
baby. But yeah, that's what's going on. And, I think everyone should listen to Zoe's music. Go see Kississippi the first chance you get. And, you know, everybody love everybody out there.
That's all you can say. Love everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.